Today's daf in Masechet Ketuvot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf, where'd we get up to? My gosh. Is daf Samar Dalet. Wow, but we went way, way ahead yesterday. All right, so yesterday we saw that we had this machloket about what the knas, well, I should call it a knas, what it is that you pay for being either a moreid or a moredet. So we said that there's a big machlokis over here between Rav Yehuda and the Tanakama. So basically, Rav Yehuda cuts things down from three dinar per week. We're talking about when a man is moreid, and he has to be mosif to his ksuva. And according to Tanakama, we're talking about a addition of three dinar. And according to Rav Yehuda, it's an addition of three tropics. And we're not quite sure what the shear is of that tropics. So my tropicking, what exactly is the size of that particular coin? It wasn't something apparently that was in use at the time of the Gemara. Omer of Sheshes, a tropic is what we call today an astira. We don't call nothing an astira because I don't know what that is. Kama astira. No, an astira is a half of a zuz, the half of the standard zuz. In other words, the zuz suri. So therefore, if you're talking about a shear of dinars, then the tropic comes out to actually exactly half of that. It works out to half. And therefore, what he's saying is that the amount of the addition that the man is going to have to make, and this, of course, in the beginning of the Mishnah is also the amount that the woman is going to lose, is also cut down by a half. So if he's saying it's a palga of a zuz, okay, now a zuz, the standard zuz, which is known as the zuz tsuri, were six ma'ot. We'll see why this is important, just to keep track of what it turns out to be the cost per day. So that would mean that one tropic would be three ma'ot. If it's three ma'ot, then it comes out to, if you're charging him for not sleeping with her, so you're charging him for his merida to add on to the ksuva, basically, as one ma'ah and a half times six, which equals the nine ma'ah, which is what we're talking about over here, because he's taking those seven, he's cutting it down to three. And three of these trophics, that would equal the 1.5 times the normal zuz tsuri. So the zuz tsuri is six ma'ah, trophic is three ma'ah. If we're going to be charging him ma'ah v'chetzi liyom, so then you end up with exactly these three trophicim, which would mean, because we've got nine ma'ah altogether, that would mean, though, that if we're charging him that, we are not charging on Shabbos, right? We're only charging for the 6 days of the week. So in other words, every day that he continues his rebellion, that we called against her, he's going to be adding to his ksuva, but not Shabbos, which is very interesting, because when we were talking about her rebellion, we were actually taking down her ksuva for a Shabbos as well. Not to mention the fact that it's double the amount. That we'll talk about why that would be true. So let's see this inside now. So Omer of Sheshes, it's an Easter. An Easter is a palga de zuza, and this works out very well. This is the brayta, Tanya Amihochi. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, shlosha trafikin. So three trafikin would equal nine ma'ah. Because after all, if we've got each one is a palga de zuza, and a zuz is six ma'ah, so then that would be 1.5. And that would equal nine ma'ah. Nine ma'ah, I mean, it has to work out some normal amount per day. Well, it does. If you take 6 days, and we're charging him only for 6 days, and what it is that we're charging him to add to his ksuva is a ma'ah and a half, works out to exactly nine ma'ah over 6 days. Omale Rebchia bar Yosef l'Shmuel, so I don't understand. When we were talking about the amount that he gets, if she is a moredet, so we ended up that we give seven trafikim, according to Rabbi Yehuda. And seven trafikim is actually takes one tropic per day. So according to Tanakhama, it's 7 dinarim, but basically it's measured per day of the 7 days of the week. So how come she is going to be losing from her ksuva for 7 days a week, and he's going to be adding to his ksuva for only 6 days a week? Why it's only adding half the amount, we'll talk about in a moment. But the bottom line is that we're not charging for Shabbos. So why is that? How come he's not adding to her? And she is losing to him. Well, answers, that's very obvious, because it's a completely different concept. So, what she is doing is losing value from her ketuvah for every day. Losing value, whatever. I mean, that's not something that you're performing and being paid for on Shabbos, so to speak. But he is adding. And basically, he's being mosif usufi komusfa. So since he has to add to her ksuva, if we include the amount of the ksuva that's being added on Shabbos, so then it does look as if we are paying for Shabbos. We have a general gezeira that we do not pay for Shabbos. So if somebody's working for you, whatever, you don't pay for Shabbos. That's called Tzchar Shabbat. Now, even though, as Tosis points out, generally, if we pay by the week, we're simply mavliya Shabbos. But says Tosis, that's not what we're doing here. We're not talking about a week. We're really talking about a day. Because imagine a situation in which we managed, the social services managed to get them together in the middle of the week. We're not going to charge for the ksuv on either end. We're not going to do the cheshbet per week because already most of the week is gone. It's basically, that's why we were basically machshiv it, how much does it come out per day? So that's what's important. And because of that, we cannot allow an increase in the ksuv, which is mechzik eschar Shabbat. The other problem is, of course, is that we're paying double for the woman is losing double from the ketuvah of what it is that he is adding to the ketuvah. And that doesn't seem very fair. So why is it that we're charging her double for a rebellion than we are charging him? So I'm like, Rebchia by Yosef Lishmuel, ma bein mored le moredet. Omar le, listen, man, the bottom line is financial, okay? The sex industry has a price, correct? That is the price that you're paying for the ksuva. Now, if you take a look at the sex industry, who's paying? The men are essentially paying. You don't often find women hiring men. So most houses of prostitution are prostitution of women who are providing services for men. So you could say whatever you want about your theories, but money's always the bottom line. So what that proves is that if the money is being generated specifically for men who pay for sex, then that must mean that the main need for sex is by men. And if that's the case, if she is not providing her services, then that means that she should be charged more than he's charged. So this is a simple financial consideration. You can see clearly that it's much more needed by men. That's number one. Dover acher, ze yitzro mi bachutz, v'zo yitzro mi bifnim. A man who is hard up is hard up. And because of that, it's noticeable, especially in those days. They didn't wear underpants or anything that would cover over their genitals in a way that an erection wouldn't be noticeable. And therefore, if she is making him going around hard up, he's going to be very embarrassed. And therefore, she's causing him embarrassment as well. And because of that, since his yetzer is external, in other words, everybody can see his level of sexual excitement, and that's an embarrassing situation to be in. And so as far as her issue, nobody knows what it is that she's going through in suffering sexual deprivation. So because of that, he's not causing her embarrassment. She's causing him embarrassment. That could also be the issue. But in either way, however you look at it, it's definitely more painful for either of these, or both of these, as far as it's more painful for her to be depriving him of what she had promised him than it is for him to be not providing her. We are ready. We've got Barnea. Gavi, quick. He's going to make me say l'chaim on some kind of coffee or something. God help us.
Yeah. Good morning.
Good morning.
Standard comment that sorry is Tyrian money from Zor. And I'll post some, and that was considered reliable because of the silver content. And that's why we're talking about Ketzet Tzari.
Thank you. Thank you, Rabbani. Okay, so for that additional background, we are very grateful to our dear Dr. Barnea. Maybe double doctor soon if he comes up with his new. L'chaim, l'chaim. Sir Richard, I think you are on. Now, this is a fascinating question. Somebody is providing for his wife through somebody else, meaning that he's providing her with her needs that are not being provided together with him. In other words, he's not, if she's with him, so whatever, you know, they're eating together, whatever he's got in the house, and so on and so forth. Over here, he's providing for her without his presence. So now the question is, okay, but how does that exactly happen? So as the Rambam explains, it's because there is no chiyuv to live together with your wife. I mean, for heaven's sakes, you can't expect a man to actually move in with a woman, right? So in which case, if he marries her, so then he has to provide all of these things for him, the ana, eflach, ve'ezun, vafarnes, yatechi, as he said. But as the Rambam writes, his lashon is ba'al shiratzali tainli ishto mizonoteha. As long as there mizonoteha ruyotla v'tiel chelet v'shotala atzma v'hu shotev ochel atzma arishut biyado. He has a right not to be sitting there together with his wife. Bilvachi ochali mami lele shabbat and lele shabbat, which is what we're about to discuss. So in other words, he should be with his wife Friday night. Now this we'll see later on whether it means ochelet means literally eat. Or ochelet is a euphemism, but halecha masher hu ochel. So it means he should be intimate with her Friday night. But this is what we're going to discuss tomorrow. But in any event, this is a big machlokas. And once again, it's obviously going to be a machlokas as far as Ashkenazim once you recognize the cultural influences that are here. And so the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, indeed, the Lashon of the Rambam, the Ramav says, well, most don't hold that. They hold if you get married, you're supposed to actually be living with your wife and so on. So that's the way we do it. Okay. So therefore, I mean, according to those shitas, what we'd be talking about over here would be a Talmud Chacham who's away for the week or where he had rishus to be away. So anyway, what is the shear? See, if he's eating with her, so suppose he's a very poor guy, you know, and he can't afford any of this. So then, according to many Rishonim, if she's eating with him, she's going to have to get along with whatever he's getting along with. But if he's not eating with her, so then he has to provide her with the absolute minimum that the Mishnah is describing. Now, these are minimal diets, but these are survival diets that he had promised to provide her with. So you can't give her less. Lo yivchot la mishnei kabin chitin. So you have to give her 2 kav of wheat every single week. And we'll see how that is what she has to turn into flour and she has to bake. But we're talking about raw chitim, raw wheat. That would be yot for making her bread with her cereal with her, whatever it is that she wants to eat chitim with. And that if she chooses or he chooses to give her instead barley, you would have to give 4 kavs of barley because it's a much coarser grain. But that would be basically the amount. So a kav, again, it would be big machlokas, whether, you know, I mean, you've got the sizes of the shiurim that go all the way from the Rambam, which is very minimal, you know, to the Chazon Ish. According to Chazon Ish, it's about 2.5 liters. According to the Rambam, it's about 1.2. I mean, these are like big, big differences. But anyway, that would be the shear of the grain. So Rabbi Yossi interjects over here with a comment, barley. Oh my God. What are we, horses over here? At least this is what the Gemara thinks he means. It turns out it isn't really what he means. But what he says is, well, who would give somebody barley? It would have to be Rabbi Shmuel, who lives near Edom. See, he's like involved with these Roman slobs, and these people are like horses. So maybe they eat barley, you know. Probably some of their descendants in the West are going to pay extra for barley because they are horses. So if they buy barley bread, who knows what they're going to pay for barley bread. But nobody else would do that. It turns out that that's not really what he means. But the Gemara is going to redefine this comment. Okay. Anyway, getting back to the list after that interjection by Rabbi Yossi, he also has to give her a half a cob of various kidneys. I mean, otherwise, what do you expect her to live without tchina and chumis? I mean, come on. So he has to give her a half a cob of kidneyot, a half of a lug of shemen. This is all we're talking about per week. So I have a lug of shemen. So it's about, again, depending on the shira, let's say a liter. Kav grogrot, which would be the whole kav of dried figs, or one mana, if you're talking about, this is like 100 zuz, of the dvela. Dvela is also figs, but they're pressed, and they're pressed into these little cakes, and then they would cut off, and they would sell it. The im ein lo, if he doesn't have these kind of things. So then these are just the type of nourishment requirements. Obviously, it doesn't have to fit precisely. As the Rambam says, whatever in your times and in that place are the equivalent of these types of foods, would you believe it? There's probably going to be some weird Jews that don't even know what tchina and chumas is. Good heavens. So then the Mishnah would have to say, and you give her so such an amount of cholent every week and such. What is cholent? Who knows? Okay, but it's every time for itself, so to speak. So whatever it is, perot mimakom acher, whatever it is. Now, besides that, he also has to provide her notin la mita mapatsu machatzelet. So he's got to give her a bed. The bed means over here, the bed frame. On top of that, he's got to put down a machatzelet, which is the hard part of the mattress, and then he has to give her this mattress cover, which is the soft, the mapatz, is also a soft mattress cover, so to speak. It's also a type of mat, but it's a much softer one. And that goes on top. Plus, he has to give her a kippah l'rosha. Plus, he has to give her a belt, or some learn that it means an apron, working apron. Chagor l'motneha. He has to give her now this. This was a major addition to the Mishnah from, you know, the missus from the Philippines, I forgot her name, who used to have like, you know, a home's worth of new shoes. What was her name again? Anybody remember? Huh?
Imelda Marcos.
Right. Okay. So anyways, become,
not Marcos, Marcos.
Marcos, okay. Yeah, my daughter wouldn't be too happy with the Marcus, right? Anyway, so he's got to give her new shoes for every yontif. I mean, you can't expect a woman to face a yontif without new shoes, right? So, minalimi moed lemoed. And he's got to give her clothes of chamishim zuz every year, new clothes worth chamishim zuz. He can't give her, this we spoke about earlier, he doesn't give her the new things that are much warmer until they get worn down. She doesn't give her new things during the summer, and he can't give her worn clothing during the winter. What he does is he gives her brand new clothing worth chamishim zuz, or material, b'yomota gishamim, and she wears them during the winter, and then by the time the summer comes, it's nice and thin and comfy. In other words, you don't need to buy your jeans pre-washed, pre-used, and pre-torn, you know. So she can do that heavy-duty work during the winter, and then she'll have nice clothes to wear during the summer. Okay, so Hashechakim Shalah. And anything that is left over from one year to the next year, she gets to keep. The Gemara is going to ask, why does she get to keep it? What is she supposed to do with it? That we'll see. Now, besides that, we talked about her allowance, right? And the allowance, if you recall, was ma'ar kesef. And that is besides the chiev to be ochelet imo milelei shabbat lelelei shabbat. And as I said, we're going to talk about what exactly that means. And the question over here is this referring specifically to a Talmud Chacham. Most learn that no, even though we say Talmud Chacham is supposed to sleep with her, that's the onat asher priyo yitain biyitah that we spoke about. But lemaisa, that's a mitzvah on everyone, because forget about specifically someone who's sensitive. Shabbos itself, besides the time that it affords him to be able to take off from his seder and so on, it's also a mitzvah to be ma'anig as haShabbos. And since sex is part of oneg, so it would be a mitzvah in terms of Shabbos, even if the person has time at other time. No tain law, so this is his ochelatimo. And if he doesn't provide her allowance of a ma'a kesev, then she gets to keep her income. Now, remember, that was a machlokas, and we said, if you hold that the ma kesev is kineged the mizonos, because we talk about the interrelationship, the mosar and so on, it would be one thing, and the mizonos would be, remember, it's a question. Mizonos is something that is katsuv, and what she produces, masiyadea, the Mishnah is going to tell us a specific amount. So the question was whether we would give one per one, the mora kesev being a specific defined amount would be keneged her malacha, or would we say that the generally accepted thing, which is that she needs to eat, and generally what she produces, lav dafka, she's going to produce any kind of mosar. Mosar doesn't have any specific amount. But on the other hand, it's much more common. So that was her machlokas. If the Mishnah means over here that if he doesn't give her a mora kesev, then she doesn't have to give her Maisi Yadayim. That would be going according to the Mandi Omar, who says that the Maisi Yadayim is Kineged, the Mor Kesev, because of its being a specific amount. However, if you don't hold that, so remember that we understood the Mishnah as meaning, Imeinu Tein L'Mor Kesev, Mozer Maisi Yadayim, or Shalah. That would be the way that normatively we understood Allah Kapatona. Okay. In order to know what the Mozar is, if this is how we're learning the Mishnah, then this is how we have to learn the next piece. In order to know what the Mozar is, so we have to know what the defined amount is. So Mahi Osalo. If you learn it according to the other approach, then Mahi Osalo is not the Mozar. It's exactly what is Keneged her Ma'ar Kesem. That was the Machlokas we went through earlier. I'm just reminding you about it. So what work does she do that she has to produce? Now, this is besides, we talked about, there's a total of seven things, one of which was working with threads, but remember that there was also doing the laundry and all of the other things about making the beds, and those days meant actual heavy-duty work, had to put out the mattress and so on every day, and all of those other things that she does, including nursing was one of them, and one of them was Osa Betzemer. So how much is the osa betzemer that she has to do? Mishkal chamesh slaim shesi biyehuda, which are eser slaim begalil, or she can change it to eser slaim arev biyehuda, which is esrim slaim begalil. Okay, so remember that the shesi, which in English they call the warp is much thinner than the arev. The arev thread is the weft thread, which is thrown back and forth when you're doing the weaving. You catch the thread as it comes out on the other end, throw it back, and so on. You know, obviously now it's done by machine, but the idea is that it's under much more stress than the warp is. So because of that, it's a much less thin, it's a thicker kind of thing, which is easier to make. I mean, if you want fine material, you know, they'll always measure, if you take a look on your sheets, they'll always measure how many warp threads are there per inch. And you can see how soft your sheet is going to be based on the number of threads. That's the only place that I know of that they still actually give you the details of the difference between the shasi and the arev. But it's fascinating. It's pashut nogea anytime you walk into a store to buy a sheet. So therefore, if you're going to make thin threads, you're going to have to do a lot more work because a thin thread has to be more tightly spun and is going to have more weight on the spinning to be able to make sure that it's spun thinly. Yeah, I don't know, for a Barnea, do you remember the Valach, the different tzitzes that he was weaving? You and Shmuel remembers. So it's mamish like a totally different thing, depending on the amount of tension that you're putting on the threads for your tzitzit. If they're these nice thin, you know, that was the special valach tzitzit that were like these really. Yeah, no, it's unbelievable. These really thin tzitzit that were beautiful and they were kofor sheish and so on. Really amazing. But anyway, so that is going to make a big difference in how much you have to produce. And so every woman with her little spinning wheel at home, the spinning wheels actually was a much later development. They just used the weight and they spun it around on that little hook. If you remember Girsa de Yankutsa from Heidi, So you remember that a lot of the women in town used to go up to the goat herd's mother, you know, and she would do the spinning for them and they would pay her. Fine. But I mean, this was every woman's nightmare, is the amount of dread that you would have to have. If not, what are you going to wear? So you're the one who actually creates what it is in the end that's going to be the production. So if he sells it, well, you know how much that production is. So that anyway, so this would be a weight of 10 sela of orev. And since in the Galil, they had the Yehuda we saw before that it was double the weight, that would equal 20 sela in the Galil if she's going to be going to the thicker thread that is less of a problem. Okay. Now, the question is, if she is also a menekes, also I want to point out that there's a major machlokas about whether, because, and I need to point it out here, we're about to talk about a menekes. There's a major machlokas about whether what we're talking about over here is part of the introduction of the Mishnah. In other words, the Mishnah was talking about a case where somebody is being mefarnes es ishto ayadei shalish. But what that means is that she is not living with him, and therefore she is not doing the laundry, she's not doing Gavi's floors, she's not providing the making the beds, and so on and so forth. The only thing that she's doing that she does at a distance for him is nursing his kid, because she's not living with him, right? So then the question is this limited to the case in the Mishnah? In other words, this is how Tosis understood it before. That in the case of the Mishnah, where she's not doing the seven melachas, she's only doing what she does from distance, so then she's got extra time to make all of this thread. But if she's doing all this other stuff, then she deducts the time that she needs to do all the other stuff. She deducts from the amount of time that the Mishnah is saying she's supposed to be using for making, for spinning thread, because she's saying, what do you mean? I'm spinning my wheels all day long, keeping up after you throwing your clothes all over the place and putting it into the wash. So therefore, the whole shear over here would only be nogea, where there is nothing for her to do. But what if there is something for her to do? Namely, she's a meineket. You see, so this like supports that whole approach. If you hold like the Rishonim that this is always, so then the idea of the Menekes is mentioned separately, not because that's the only thing that could be done from the distance for him, but rather it's because the Menekes requires protection in terms of extra nourishment and not getting her tired out and so on. So it's a completely different issue. There's two very different ways of understanding the Mishnah. So Imaita Menika. So then, first of all, she doesn't have to work as much. That could be just because she has to take off the time from nursing, if you hold that she, this is all connected, the various jobs that she's doing. But it could also be that she doesn't have to work as much because she can't tire herself out. Plus, Mosifin la al mizonotea, she also needs to eat for two, so to speak. We'll see in the Gemara why we're Mosifin la. So, these shiurim that we just gave you are absolute minimums. We're talking over here about is basically substance diets. This is ba'oni shebi Yisrael. If someone is married to that mishpacha that is mechubedet, so be mechubad, kol afi kvadar. He can't give her less than he is mechuyev, than he does for himself, obviously. And the truth is, many of the Rishonim hold that in the first part of the Mishnah, the Al Yedei Shalish, the idea over there is even if he was with her, it wouldn't make any difference. Because even if he can't afford to eat, he still has to provide her to eat. So let him not eat. He can't say, you'll survive on whatever I survive. This is a whole question, whether that is part of the implications of the beginning of the Mishnah. Now, the problem over here is that in defining what a minimal diet is, we are running into all kinds of problems. Why? Because, first of all, remember that when it comes to an Erev on Shabbos, as Richie can tell you, what we're talking about an Erev of Tchumim over here. Not many other people besides Richie need to engage in Eruvei Tchumim, but out there on Richie's island, you do have to engage in Eruvei Tchumim if you want to go anywhere. So what is necessary is to provide the amount of two meals. So that means that whatever we're going to define as the amount of a meal is going to be very nogea the dinim of Erev. And there's lots of other issues as well, because it's going to be nogea how we measure the amount of food, that if the food is tamei min rabbanan, what's the din about someone who eats it, and the din of tumas gvia min rabbanan? It's going to be nogea a diraisa. Where's the diraisa about eating a certain amount of bread? The din of the ochel babayit in the case of tzaraas. So if it's a bayit tzarua or there's a mitzora in the house, there's a big nafkamina between haba el habayit and between someone who is ochel babayit. So if he eats, which means that he stays long enough to eat, doesn't mean that he literally eats, but if he stays that sheer, so then he's also metame the begodim that he is wearing, which otherwise he would not be metame what he's wearing. And that means that defining what would be a standard definition of ochel, so what's the meal that is ochel, is also going to be nogea, this Mishnah, because now you're defining what we mean by providing a meal. That means that we're going to have to look across all of these sugyas in order to be able to see that the Mishnah adds up according to the various shitas. Now, that's going to take us a little bit of fourth grade arithmetic, which, of course, is going to leave out 90% of the people over here. Of all those people who always complain, I can't figure out these numbers and so on. So anyway, please do put on your thinking cap. Barnea utilizes coffee as his thinking caps. They are, by the way, starting to actually market thinking caps. This was a last month's discovery that if you put on this cap that actually provides jolts of electricity to your brain at certain time intervals. In a minute, but in the middle of the sentence, at certain time intervals, so that actually allows you to remember things better or to work out things better and so on. So those thinking caps will soon be available on the DAF thing. We'll provide the link. The money goes to Rav Kaplan's tzedakah shir, of course. Anyway, but yes, I posted yesterday the letter by Rav Berkowitz, who looked into the issues over there to see if they are reliable. I looked at it myself as I wrote you, and I spoke to the people that are involved, and it seems to be, even though obviously I can't say, as we talked about, you know, believing what some amazing thing that today in the West, believing somebody could betray means he looks like an honest guy. And as I mentioned to you, Rav Meshe Zatzal Paskin, like, so what does it mean to believe someone because you really believe him, that you have a right to take what he says seriously? You know, a couple of decades, you know him, and you've been able to see that he's, I mean, can you imagine, like, this insanity? People literally trust people. Yeah, he looks like an honest guy. It's amazing how many of these bouncy schemes and all of these crazy fishing expeditions and so on, people go right for it. That's what happens when there's no guidance in the Torah. You're ready to believe anything. So as I say, I cannot say that the people that are involved, and I'm saying this because I don't want to chas v'shalom be made on something I don't personally know. Rav Kaplan I knew for 60 years, and I could say that this person is completely nema. I don't know his wife personally. I don't know his kids personally, but I did speak to everyone that's involved, including his wife and including two of the kids that are involved separately. I spoke to each one of them. And the gaboyim that were involved in defining who is trustworthy and that really requires the money, and they would go into their homes and so on. Three different people who do this kind of thing, and they're still involved. An individual in Chicago who was making sure that all expenses were covered outside of the tzedakah money that's being raised, so that not one penny would be going to any type of, like, the usually, you know, 60-70% are going to the maintaining the office of the tzedakah, that this was all tzedakah that went directly. He is still involved, and he's still making sure that everything is covered outside of the funding of the tzedakah itself. So that's why I felt it was special. And I can tell you that there are people that claim that they're still doing that and that they're reasonable people, and that Rav Berkowitz also looked into it and feels that it's good. So even though it's not my personal thing anymore, but I would imagine it's probably better than just about anything else in terms of reliability that you could find. Anyway, so getting back to all of this, let's take a look.
The drink, yes.
Gavi, show me a drink, please. I can't drink that kind of stuff. It takes away my cheshek to drink. Okay, fine. Even if it's got a potential for some boost, it's a drink. Where's Akiva? Where's Akiva when you need him?
just to catch up, Rishi is always looking for the finish line. But in archaeology, loom weights are the presence of women. So in Masada, in all different periods, when we find loom weights, then we assume that's women. And if there's a room with loom weights, we assume that means that there are women there. It could be a wrong assumption, but that's the rule of thumb.
Interesting.
Rishi always used tomato sauce, not ketchup.
Okay. You know, Daniil, I'd much rather go on a tour around Tzfat. But, okay, it looks like we'll have to do with Serbia today or wherever. I don't know where it is.
Just my primary school.
You're going back to school?
Yeah, my primary school, yes.
Okay, beautiful. All righty. So now the question is that the shear, the Mishnah says you're supposed to give her two calves of wheat, and that's supposed to be what she eats a week, does not make sense if you look at the various shitot that appear in the dinim that we were talking about, particularly Erev, because as we get into all of these special halachas. So let's take a look at the Gemara's Kasha. Mani Masnis, who would actually be the shita that two calves of wheat is going to be sufficient for the meals that she's eating in the week? It certainly does not go according to the shitas that we're aware of in the Dinim of Erev, not Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, and not Rabbi Shimon. Let's take a look at the Mishnah in Erevin, and that way we'll see what our problem is over here. Kama Shi'ura, what is the measure? Again, we're talking about an Erev Tchumim, remember, and your simon is Richie. Other people make these, you know, other kinds of Erev, and no, siree, we're talking about Sir Richard's Erev, and that's Tchumim. So it would need to be mazon shtei su'udot kol echad v'echad. It's defined by every individual, the number of people who are going to be utilizing this Erev. They have to be able to have enough food there for their two meals on Shabbat, and then this becomes their makom ha-shvita of Shabbat. Now, it doesn't literally mean the whole meal. It means whatever food you're selecting to be the Erev, enough of that food that would be your meal. That's why Richie, of course, would just use a little bit of talisker. So enough talisker for Richie. Actually, would use grape juice.
Actually, it was grape juice and a couple of loaves that I remember.
Yeah. I'm kidding. But it would have been sweet if it was talisker now, wouldn't it? Anyway, so we need to understand what that amount is. Now, before we get to the amounts, and which is the machlokas of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka or Rabbi Shimon, we need to define, are we talking about Shabbos meal amounts, if we're talking about the amount of bread that you would need besides your grape juice, or are we talking about weekday amounts? So that's a machlokas. According to Rabbi Meir, it's the amount of food that you would eat for two meals not on Shabbos. So mizono l'chol v'lo l'shabbat, divrei Rabbi Meir. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda said, no, it's the amount of bread you would eat for two of Shabbos meals, not what you would eat on your weekday meals. But the truth is, there's no machlokas. The question is, when do you eat more bread? Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda would both be, zeh v'zeh mitkavnim l'hakel. They were both trying to find the lowest amount. And what happened was Rabbi Meir would eat a lot more challah on Shabbos because he would eat bread with whatever it was that he was eating. Masha Einkein, Rabbi Yehuda, would eat more bread during the week because he would rely on the steak to get filled up with the not on the bread. So, as you know, people till today still have different minhagim in this kind of thing. Okay, but now we get to the part that's important to us. So now analyzing how much that is, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says, okay, let me tell you what we're talking about. If you can buy bread, which is one kikar, so let me tell you how much that is. It's a loaf of bread that you can buy for one pundion. And you can buy this when the cost of the raw wheat is four sa'ah of grain per sela. And if you can figure that out, now right now we think that we don't need to take other costs into consideration. We're translating directly. In the end, it's going to talk about, obviously, the additional costs of producing bread, which include labor costs, because when you're talking about bread, you're talking about also buying at a bakery, and which include fuel costs. So all of that is going to make a big dent in what you're going to come out with at that price. But right now we assume, and that's why we've got our problem, right now we assume that Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka is talking about straight out, and that's what the issue is. So what he says is, I'm not interested in Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda that talk about what you would normally eat. I'm going to give you a specific shear. And that's where we get into the problem of our Mishnah, because there we're talking about a particular shear of food. And therefore, we need to explain it if we're going to translate the grain, the raw grain, directly into bread. So then what we're saying is that since, and here's where we got to remember our amount, since the four sa'ah per sela, that would equal 12 beitzim. How does it equal 12 beitzim? Because remember, a sela is for dinner. And the for dinner is basically each dinner is a ma'ah. And that would give us now the 4 times 6 is 24. And each ma'ah is 2 pundyonos, which gives us 48 pundyons in a sela. And the sa'ah that is being produced over here, one sa'ah is 6 kavs, and we're getting 4 sa'ah, which is 24 kavs. So what we're saying is when 4 sa'ahs, the 24 kavs, sell for 48 pundyons, that works out pretty well, right? Because that means for every 2 pundyons, you can get yourself a kav, and that means that the price of pundyon will get you is a chatzi kav. And since a kav is 24 beitzim, so then that means you're getting 12 beitzim worth of grain for your single pundyon. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says that this loaf that is going to be the size of your erev for 2 meals, it can be bought for 1 pundyon, and that seems to mean that for 12 beitzim worth of grain, you've got yourself 2 whole meals for the erev. That's his shear. Masha Inken, Rabbi Shimon says, no, that's not the amount necessary. It's rather the amount of bread is actually 2/3 of a kikar, but not your kikar. It's 2/3 of a kikar where you get 3 of them per kav. So in other words, I'm giving you a standard. Also, I don't agree with any of the 3 shitas before. So 1 su'uda would therefore, if we're talking about over here, the su'udas, which is important for us to define, as we'll see. But essentially, what he is claiming, Rabbi Shimon, he's about to go into all of the different shiurim in a moment. So that would mean we need 2/3 of a loaf where you get 3 loaves to 1 kav. So then that would mean that 1 meal is 1/3 of the loaf, because 2/3 was enough for the erev, which is 2 meals, when the whole loaf would be 3 full meals. And that would mean that 1 kav, which is 3 of these loaves, because it says you can get 3 per kav, would be enough for 9 meals. Now, in terms of the number of beitzim, if we want to compare it to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, it works out very different, because since a kav is 24 beitzim, as we saw, the kikar that we're talking about over here is 3 per kav. That would mean that there's 8 beitzim, and that would mean that 2 meals would be 2/3 of 8 beitzim. So the 2 meals would only be 5 1/3 beitzim, right? Okay. So then the implications of this are that half of that, whatever that is, in other words, we're all agreed about the relationship. Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Broka are agreed that the amounts in terms of proportion for other things are the same. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, we're talking about the 12 beitzim per loaf. And according to Rabbi Shimon, we're talking about 8 beitzim loaf. But now what do we do with that loaf? So that kikar would actually make a tremendous difference, because chetzya labayit hamenuga, the shear of being metame begodim by eating or having staying in a house long enough to be eating that amount is the amount of that half of that loaf, which is the one meal. And therefore, this is going to define when you become tame. Half of that, a quarter of a kikar, is the shear of being metame via midrabanan, that if you eat that, you become usher to eat truma, even though obviously oichlin can never be metame and adam. But midrabanan, we have a concept of tumas gvia, that if you eat food which is tame, you become possible for truma specifically. And half of that, which is chati chetzi chetzia, so an eighth, that is what is for Tumas Eichlin. And remember the big machlokas Rashi and Tosfos about whether Tumas Eichlin means for Eichlin to be metame other things, or Tumas Eichlin means even to be makabel Tuma. So that is, we've had that machlokas all over. And that is, according to Rashi, any amount is makabel Tuma, but to be metame acherim is the shear that we're talking about. And there's all kinds of riots to that from other places as well. And according to Tosfos, it's across the board. This is the shear for Tuma. So in terms of Kabbalah's Tuma as well. So now, here's our problem. Our problem goes like this. I asked you, who do you think the Mishnah is going according to? Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka? Rabbi Shimon? Absolutely not. And I'll show you why. Because you say we're giving her two kavs for a whole week. Now, a whole week is a minimum of seven times two meals a day. And if you need three meals on Shabbos, it's going to be 15 meals. But it's certainly 14 meals, right, is the minimum that you have to eat. So now, if you're going on Libet Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, he says that the two meals for an Erev Techumim is a half of a kav. But then that would mean that two kavs are only going to be eight meals. So how do you cover 14 or 15 meals with the amount of food that when it comes to an Erev are only going to cover you eight meals? And according to Rabbi Shimon, you've got the opposite problem, because he says that two meals for an Erev Techumim are only 2/9 of a kav. We have the 2/3, right, that worked out from that loaf, which is 1/3. But then that means that you're going to have 18 meals from two kavs. If it only takes 2/9 of a kav for two meals, and that's more than 14, it's more even than 15, if you want to include the Suda Shlishit. So neither pshat works out in the Mishnah. Answers the Gemara, well, it does if you recognize that you're making a big mistake. It's going according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, but you need to define Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka the way Rav Chisda explained him. And that is that Seimim Shlish Lechenvani. You need to recognize that the Chenvani is going to have to get his profit, which includes all of his labor, right? So his labor costs are going to be 50% add-on. 50% add-on, remember, in terms of the way that the Gemara always measures it. If it measures it milabar, so 50% is 1/3 milabar. In other words, out of the total of 150%. So then 1/3 of that is going to equal what was added on. What? I'm on the shlish, but you're not allowing me to finish explaining. 1/3 of a total is 50% of the original amount. That's called shlish milabar. So then if that's the case, you're going to have to add an additional third, because you thought we were translating that full amount. It's not true. That was the raw amount before processing by the guy who's taking their profit. So if you're going to do that, you're going to have to add an additional third, and add it to the eight meals, and that brings you up to what you need. No, it doesn't. I got bad news for you. But adding a third of the eight, which means you're going to add another four, then all you're going to get is 8 + 4, which sadly does not equal 14 or 15. It equals 12. Okay, so how about you math challenge people? You still don't get out of Rabbi Yochanan. You don't get Rabbi Yochanan and Broka equal your 14 or 15 meals. Yeah, but you forgot she eats with him on Leil Shabbat, right? So that covers the missing, we'll ask in a moment, but that does not cover the whole thing either. But all right, let's pretend for a moment that covers the missing meal. So Ochelet Imo Leil Shabbat, well, first of all, when it says Ochelet Imo Leil Shabbat, That doesn't necessarily mean she eats food with him. It might mean the same thing it meant with Yosef, chutz min alechem asher hu ochel, which was a euphemism for sex. I mean, so maybe ochelet imo means that. And we're going to see that that's a machlokas. So if you hold that achila means literally eating, fine. But what about if you hold achila means tashmish? What are you going to say? Not to mention, I didn't want to embarrass you, but pointing out that 1 plus 12 equals 13, not 14 or 15. So, I mean, how about that little problem, right? The Tleisa Havian, 1 to the 12 is only 13. Okay. 1 second. I got a solution. Rav Chisda, was another thing that Rav Chisda said. Now, we're going to ask in a minute. I mean, Rav Chisda's he's contradicting himself. Okay. But before Rav Chisda said, you've got to add an additional 50% profit, which is one-third of the Mibachutz. But there's another thing that Rav Chisda said, which is that he adds actually 100% markup, and therefore you would have to take off one-half for what it is that he's added. So you'd have to take off Atya Palga Vishadi Iluya. So basically, if he's saying that the markup is 100%, so then you're going to have to add that amount at the end. You've got to take an additional half, which is 100%, add it to it, and then that would be a total to add to your original, supposedly, your original 8 meals. We're going to ask in a moment that doesn't really add up yet, because first of all, we're just concerned about the fact that Rav Chisda doesn't seem to make up his mind. Kasha Rav Chisda, Rav Chisda. First he said that it was 1/3 of the total, and now you're saying it's half of the total, which would mean that the markup was a full 100%, and that we're taking out a 300%, so to speak, we're taking out 100%. Lo Kasha. That doesn't bother me, because one Rav Chisda was talking about covering fuel costs, and the other one was talking about not including fuel costs. What do you mean? How could you not include fuel costs? I mean, they're costs, aren't they? Yes, but there were places where the cost of the grain was provided with fuel. So, haba atu diavitzivi, if the sellers of the grain provide the pieces of wood that you need to bake, so then the fuel is covered. If they're not providing tzivi, then you're going to add a full 100% markup, which is now the actual half of the total. Okay, fine. Let's even say it's Rav Chisda. Okay, you started with 8. So now you're saying that we got to double that, right? And now you've got too much. So now you're saying that she's got 16 meals, but she doesn't need 16 meals. I mean, unless you're going to say that the Mishnah is saying stam like Rav Chitka, which Moshe Forman is very happy about, because according to Rav Chitka, you need 4 meals on a Shabbos, not 3 meals on a Shabbos, in which case there's 14 meals plus an additional 2 meals to cover Shalosh Arus and Rav Chitka's extra Seudah. So the only kasha the Gemara has that doesn't cover it, according to Moshe Forman, who holds you need 5 meals on Shabbos. Okay, so we didn't ask for Medas Yochid. But the point is that it's difficult to believe that the Gemara would have said a Stam Mishnah would be going like Rav Chitka. So are you saying that Rav Chitka, the Omer Arba Sudot, Chayav Adam Lachol B'Shabbat? No. Afilu Teimer Rabbona. Remember that there's always people who drop in. And the husband has got to cover that as well, because that's part of normal social presence. And he's got to be able to allow someone to drop in, and not that his wife is going to be in a position, we don't have any food. So because of that, there's one extra meal. So dalchadela arche uparche, and that explains why we only need 15 meals plus one for a guest. By the way, says the Gemara, once you're ready to just, I mean, this is pretty arbitrary. So you've decided you need one meal for a guest. Fine, so now it could work out according to anybody, you know. So hashta da tita lahachi, it could be going like Rabbi Shimon also. Because you said, well, what do you mean? 2 kavs according to Rabbi Shimon is 18 meals, you know. She doesn't need 18 meals. You could say, yes, she does. And that if you're going according to the Rabbanan, who say, not like Rabbi Chitka, and you only need 3 meals on Shabbos, so then you still can get 18 meals, because she needs 15 meals herself, plus maybe she needs 3 meals. for Archeo Parchis. We have to give her extra. I mean, the whole thing now is arbitrary. You're guessing at how many guests may stop in, you know? And according to Reb Chitka, so you got to give her two additional meals. Besides the Salashuddas and Reb Chitka and the normal 14, you've got to have two additional meals for the Archeo Parchis. So that equals 16 meals in total. So now it's easy to work out everything, you know? Okay, but what does Reb Yossi mean when he says, barley? Barley, who would give barley? It's got to be Reb Yishmael. What are you talking about? You really believe that the only people who eat barley are Roman slobs? I mean, what is that supposed to mean? Elabedomu da'achlin sa'orin, b'kuli hamalo achlis. Nobody's eating barley, right? Only Reb Yishmael is scarf to Rome. That's not true. No, no, of course that's not what Reb Yossi was saying. Reb Yossi is saying Reb Yishmael's barley was pretty low-class barley if you had to double the amount, right? So therefore, I mean, if you're going to be going to Barleyman's Inn, it certainly cannot be a place where they're going to be serving you that kind of stuff. So if that's the case, then what he's saying is, Rabbi Shmuel lives near Edom. Over there, the barley was really junk. That's why he has to say double. But that's reputation. Sa'urin Adomiot are very low-class. Plus, he's got to give her enough tchina, and he's got to give her enough chumus, and so on. V'noti l'chatzi kaf kitnis, and so on and so forth. And there's one very important missing ingredient. Missing ingredient? Yes! Doesn't say anything about wine. I understand, that's like a very expensive addition. And all of a sudden, what, we don't have to give her wine? Ilu yayin katani, lo katani, misayei le l'rebel ozer. This only works out according to Rebbe Elazar. Rebbe Elazar says that a woman who is living on her own, ain poskin yenot leisha, because basically wine and sex goes together. And if you want her to behave herself and she's on her own, do not provide her wine. That's exactly why there's no wine that is mentioned. You'll say, but the Pasuk says, in talking about, of course it's metaphorical, but when Klal Yisrael is compared to an Isha and so on, it says over there that you want to go after your Aveda Zora, Elcha Harai Ma'avai, I'm going to go after my lovers, you know, the guys who give me my lechem, my mayim, my tzemer, my pishtan, my shemen, and shikuyai, they provide me with my talisker. So then, obviously, we do provide her. She's considering that to be her basic needs. No, shikuyai has a double meaning. Shikuyai doesn't necessarily mean the liquids. Shikuyai would mean from the word mishtokeket, something that turns me on. These are things shayisha mishtokeket alayin. What is a woman mishtokeket for? Mainiu takshitin. So it's talking about the ones who send me all that pretty jewelry. That's what I'm waiting for. In which case, we go in here, I leave it to Rebbe Elazar, and we see that we do not provide any kind of wine for her, and that's not included. Let's give over the drasha, which is a very sweet drasha. Darash Rebbe Ishkvar Naviraya, or Amila Ishkvar Nipur Chayo. There's other gifts, Ishkibor Chayo. That, by the way, you could still go and see Rebbe Yudas Beit HaKnesset that is still there. I'm sure Gavi has even walked there. Have you walked there? You have to continue walking all the way to where the road ends up cutting into the main, to the highway. That's going up to where you've taken us to Rabbi Yossi Haglili and so on. But anyway, so that is where that is located. And you can see the Aron HaKodesh that Rabbi Yehuda who is Ish Nivarcha. It's an amazing thing because it still has the dedication on top of the Aron HaKodesh, you know, that this was dedicated by so-and-so, was built, I believe it was 367 years from the Zman of the Churban. Can you imagine that that's how they dated it? Am I right, Barnea? Do you remember exactly the date there?
The Shul of Navona?
Yeah.
About?
Yeah. That is that.
I don't remember the date, but I can get the article.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Anyway, and that, by the way, is where Rebbe Elazar HaModoi is buried, in the Ma'ara. I used to go there all the time, and as I come in, I would always say, "Adayin tzrichen anu l'madoi." What are you doing here? But it's a beautiful, beautiful place to go. Anyway, so Darash Rabbi Yehuda Ishkvar Niviraya, minayin she'ein poskin yenot li'isha. I can prove to you that we don't give wine to a woman. Shenemar v'tokum chana. Acharei achla b'shilo v'acharei shato. Now, remember that shato, I mean, doesn't really mean he drank. This papashtas is just referring after eating and drinking, right? But we're darshaning it, shato, he drank, but not shata, which of course makes the whole story of Eli suspecting her of being a drunk. It completely changes the whole context of the story, right? And anyway, so it says that he drank and she didn't even drink. Wait a minute. So then it says after she ate, achla. So you're saying 494 years it was? Okay. Elameata achla, after she ate means after she ate and he didn't eat. What are you saying? That she was the only one who ate from the shlamim? No, you're not understanding my drasha. I'm saying the pasuk has now gone out of its way to change what it was talking about. We've been talking about her, right? As we said, Chana got up, and this was after Chana ate, and now all of a sudden we say, and he drank? Why do we do that? That doesn't make any sense. So my time is Shani. Shema Amina, it's coming to tell us that she didn't even drink, which of course is very meaningful in terms of the story, that we should know that she didn't drink. So the Shinoi, the way we're understanding it, so why didn't she drink? Because it's inappropriate. He drank, but she didn't drink. Okay. Tomorrow we will see some problems with this approach, but Reb Barnea has given us even a picture of the Aron Kodesh so that you can vicariously enjoy it.